Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. This episode has been 2 years in the making. I've been talking about my conversation with David Jacoby since 2018. I explained the process a little bit in last week's episode, but David has had a really tough go of things since his name was brought into the West Memphis 3 case by Terry Hobbs back in 2007. His life has been forever changed, and he has a really hard time trusting people. So it took me nearly a year to develop enough of a relationship with David for him to sit down and let me turn on a microphone and a camera and record this exclusive, in total, 2-hour interview with the man that everyone wants to know more about. In this week's episode, you're going to hear part one of that interview. And then next week, you'll hear the second hour. So after a short break, here is my interview with David Jacoby.
Texas Ranger James Holland is a legendary interrogator. They call him the serial killer whisperer.
You can't hide those indications, and that's why yesterday I knew that you did it.
But now, shocking interrogation tapes reveal how the super cop really operates.
And that's why they asked me to come in, because I'm special.
From Something Else, The Marshall Project, and Sony Music Entertainment, this is Smokescreen. Just Say You're Sorry. Listen and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So we'll start right from the beginning. You said you had a pretty good anchor. You know what time you got off of work.
Yes. I was off work at least 4 o'clock, you know, give or take 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. It takes me 20 minutes to get home. It was a straight drive home. As usual, I go straight home. Get home at 4:30. I take my boots off, sit down, smoke a cigarette, watch TV, the news. More than likely, pick up my guitar, play with the kids a little bit, and pick up my guitar. Basically, that was a routine every work day.
Pretty much every day after work, you'd come home, play the guitar, play with the kids.
And till supper's ready, mm-hmm. And then I'd eat supper. But
So on that day, at some point after you got home, Terry Hobbs came over to your house.
Yes.
About what time do you think that was?
I hadn't been home long, but I was 5, maybe a little after.
So you get home at 4:30, somewhere a little after five, Terry comes by.
Right. I knock on the door, and I open the door, and it's Terry and Amanda. And I open the door and tell him, come on in. He comes in, and I said, what are you doing? Where's Stevie? Something along them lines, And he said, well, he's riding his bike. He was supposed to be home at 4:30, but he hadn't made it yet. I was playing the guitar, and I told him, he asked what I was doing, and I was telling him, I'd sitting down trying to figure out the song. I said, I know I've heard you play it. Could you show me, And but I got to go, Stevie's, Stevie's supposed to be home. He's riding his bike. I said, look, just leave your truck at the edge of the driveway, and he'll see it when he comes by, because he's, walked by before with his I don't know if it was the same boys, but his friends, and sometimes Pam, sometimes Terry's sister. And I've seen them go by. So I thought, just leave your truck there. He comes by, he'll see your truck. Mm-hmm. And he'll come knock on the door or come on in. So he did. He sat down and left his truck out there. And Amanda playing with Victoria, my daughter. And Victor, which he was just a baby then, but he crawling around, I believe, on the floor. And we sat down and we played for a little while.
And what was the song you were trying to play?
Pretty Women. Pretty Woman by Roy Orbison. Not the Van Halen, but mm-hmm. Roy Orbison.
Did you get it by the time it was over?
Well, I think I did. I was pretty close. It's a long thing, but I don't do it much no more. I just, very rarely now anymore do I pick it up. It's just, it's like a link.
Mm-hmm. I understand. So you and Terry start working on that song?
Yeah, for a while. It was under an hour, I'd say. It was pretty close, maybe under an hour, maybe 45 minutes.
Okay. And then he
said he's got to go. He'd go see if Stevie's at home, so, since he didn't come by there. So he left and he went home. I suppose he went home. He come back. Maybe 20 minutes, maybe been gone.
Just enough time to go home and look for him.
Yeah, I believe pretty sure that's about what it was, you know, as far as I can remember. I mean, I think I'm pretty close, pretty accurate in that. But then he comes back and said, no, he wasn't home. And he wanted to go look for him. And I said, you want me to help you? You know, do I want me to ride with you? And I'm pretty sure, you know, he said, well, he asked my wife if she would watch Amber or Amanda. And she always did before. I mean, he really wouldn't even have to ask. He just walked out and left her there. But she told him that she would watch him, and we left. drove around, you know, the neighborhood. He's driving, you know, and we looked, you know, looking, going slow down the street, looking around, you know, looking for anybody out there playing, any kids, any noise. But
you guys were in Terry's truck?
Yes, we was in Terry's truck.
So that would have been somewhere right around 6, you think? Gets there at 5,
yeah,
play guitar?
Maybe a little after 6, you know. I don't see it being like, you know, straight up 6 o'clock. It seemed like it was, you know, when he came back and we decided to go look, I'm pretty sure it probably took me a little bit to get, you know, get back, get my shoes on, and, you know, because I'd already taken them off and sit at the house. But it was probably a little after 6. I mean, it's hard to pinpoint that time. But
sure.
It don't seem like it was like, you know, that quick. It was just like, you know, sometimes it takes me a little while to get ready, you know, especially since I've been working. I come home, sit down, reluctantly want to get up. But I mean, it wasn't too much past 6, I would say.
Yeah. And so you guys take off in his truck and you're just driving around the neighborhood.
Right. Driving, the streets. I hardly remember. I remember my address, but, yeah, we driving through the neighborhood, not far from, you know, where he lives or I lived, and it was a couple blocks apart, but, you know, 4 or 5 blocks to the north, 4 or 5 blocks to the, west and south. I mean, like a big square we made. I want to say it was Barton Street for a ways, and, made our way to 7th Street. Still hadn't seen any kids, but, we went, 7th Street South, I think. No, yeah, 7th Street. And, I think it was like 2 little bridges that crossed the road, or you cross these bridges going across the road. And, at one of them, you know, we were driving slow in the truck and we light traffic, but, we crossed one bridge and we heard some kids hollering, and I told him to stop. And, he pulled over and I'm listening, you know, and we could hear some kids laughing and playing and couldn't see them. And I was looking down through, you know, across the ditch over the bridge, and I seen people out playing in the backyard of the yard that was fenced in, you know. And, so it was a false alarm. I believe after we crossed the second bridge, he turned around and we came back and made a which would be a right. We're headed back to the north. He made a right. I don't know the name of that street, but we came back up close to where he lived on Macaulay Street is where we, you know, wound up after we got back to, I think that was 14th Street. And his street was, you know, right across 14th. And we came back, I think we came by his house, and there's another little street before you get to my street, and it goes behind, I think, I don't know if it was Wilson or something like that. And I remember we went behind that street, which took us behind our house, my house. And I think back, you know, that was just the one big loop we made. And,
right. Then he dropped you back off.
He dropped me back off.
How long do you think you might have been in the car that time?
I think as slow as we were going, I'd say 25, 30 minutes, you know. We were driving real slow. I mean, he's looking on one side of the street. I'm looking on the other side of the street.
Right. So then he drops you back off and then leaves again. And then later he comes back and picks you up again.
Yes, he comes back again. He's checked somewhere, and I really can't pinpoint that. Maybe another statement earlier might say it. I don't know. I just hate when I can't put it back together, but he was there. He said he checked, you know, he wasn't home. He went, he'd stopped by somebody's house. I don't know if it might have been Mark Byers or Todd Moore's. I think it was one of the boys' parents, you know, that he'd stopped to see if they were there or something. But when he did come back, we're trying to guess about where he could be, he had talked to somebody. He hadn't seen him. He wasn't at home. And we wound up leaving again. We went north of, I lived on 17th Street. So we went north on 17th Street, wound up over close to where the Flash Market is, on Ingram. That's at Ingram Boulevard. And before you could, cross the overpass, there was a motel on the left. All right. We circled around there and went towards the service road, but service road was one way. So you had to stay back a street and wound up on 18th Street, which is right there off the service road. And then I think, we didn't see nothing there anyway, but we turned around and would be west. I think that may be Barton again, off of 18th Street. We made a right going back west. We wound up going back down Barton Street. The apartments, I think, were the apartments on that street? I think we go past these. Yeah, we go past the apartments. We're still looking. And I asked him, has he stopped at stores? And I think once we passed that Flash Market, I remember, I think I was, saying, maybe they went to the store. I asked him, did Stevie have any money? He said he didn't know, but he sometime had, some change. And I said, did you check was any of these stores? And he said, well, no, I didn't think of that. And so we pulled over, right up ahead was a little store. I think it was another Flash Market or some little store.
That's the store there on 7th and...
7th and Barton, Barton. I think yeah. That's Barton. So anyway, he pulls over and I didn't ask him, do you want to go in or nothing? I just hopped out and I walked in the store. And as I was walking in, these kids was coming out. And I walked in and I asked, were looking for this kid? He's blonde, riding a bicycle, got spiked hair. And now we wasn't paying attention anyway, I turn around, I come out and, I tell him, I said, they don't know if he's been in there or not. I told him what they told me and we pull off. And as we was going past the parking of the store, there was a storage unit place and I think a car wash. And these little kids, there was three or four little kids there that had walked out in front of me at the store. And I said, hang on just a minute. Let's ask these kids. And I said, have you guys seen this little boy walk, riding his bicycle with blonde hair spiked and, kind of described him best I could. And the girl said, there was some boys playing over in this lot over here. And, she pointed, I can't remember seeing, I just remember her saying over here by the apartments. And that's, mm-hmm. I don't think I've seen apartments really. Just that direction. But anyway, we go back Barton and I think that not too far down there on the left was some apartments and there was a little grassy lot right outside of it. And, but no kids there. Then we went back. I think we continued on Barton and, we're looking on both sides, like I say, and going slow, looking on both sides, the road, him one, me the other, and still don't see any kids. And I think we made a left off of Barton and on another road, almost like making a U-turn, but we was like a block over and coming down. And that's where I see, there's a big space behind these houses. And, later find out it's a ditch or a bayou or whatever they want to call it.
So you guys were up on that W.E. Cat
Street. Yeah. I think that's what that mm-hmm. street is, W.E. Cat. Anyway, that's where we're looking, behind houses again there, just slowly going. At one point, we'd come up on, the yards that was fenced, maybe two or three in a row. You couldn't see behind because of the fence running north and south. He parked the truck, and we got out, and we walked behind between houses and started, making like a come behind, go between one house, go behind the other house, come back out because of the fence, and go back around. We came upon, some people out there, I don't know. How many, two or three here, a couple here, and they were standing there talking. I think the closer we got, Terry may have asked them if they seen, Stevie or something, but at one point or another, it turned into there was three kids missing all of a sudden, you know.
Okay. So about how long from the, do you think it was from the time he picked you up? You guys drove around till you got to that point up there by the woods.
Oh God, that's, man, okay, it was a slow ride, just, you know, one way down the other.
About the same as the last trip or?
I'm pretty close, I'd say. And it's, you know, it's hard to say. I think we covered more ground on trip two than we did actually, you know, on the first trip. It could have been just a little bit longer. I mean,
okay. Maybe 20, 30 minutes somewhere in there.
And could be just a little bit more. I mean, it seems, you know, there was a lot of stopping and, you know, like going into the store and then, turning around at, you know, past, the intersection of whatever road that was. We made that little block, I mean, WCAT, when we come back on WCAT, and then getting out, parking, getting out, walking back, coming around another house. I think we did get back in the truck, move down maybe a block or, you know, maybe half a block and see another, you know, houses you could get between and go back. And that's when we ran across the other people in that yard.
Do you know who any of those other people were?
No, I didn't know very many people. I knew, I think a total of three people, and that's including Pam and Terry, are actually three households. Mm-hmm. And, besides my neighbors that live, you know, around me, but that's, I just hadn't, you know, I mean, I've lived there for a little while, but I really don't, other than work and home, I didn't go out and I didn't have a associating with a lot of people, you know.
So you come across these people, and then at some point you said you went back into what you just thought was some weeds and woods. It's actually what the kids called Robin Hood Woods.
Right. That's when, once we, you know, got there, and I'm just assuming that he maybe knew some of these people. I'm not sure, but it wound up being, you know, they were looking for two other kids also besides, you know, Stevie. So, you know, they're talking and I'm saying, well, wait, has anybody, where have you looked? I mean, you know, what are you guys doing? And they said, well, we're trying to figure out which way to go or where they might be. And somehow, I mean, somebody said they was here or there. And I said, well, look, we need to find them then. I mean, let's go look. And, you know, there were some younger kids, you know, I call them kids. I mean, 19, 20 years old, probably in early teens and some in the late teens, could be as much as 20, 21. But as I started walking off, and, you know, I did hear a couple of them say, well, we're going to go with him. And I just immediately, you know, went off towards the weeds, towards the woods. And as soon as I, you know, maybe got a few yards in, I start seeing, you know, trash or litter. And I'm thinking, you know, looking for these kids, we're probably going to find candy wrappers, Coke cans, whatever they could have got at the store or brought from home. And, you know, maybe calling that a picnic or whatever they call it, you know, going out at that age. But that's what I was, you know, first looking for. But as I got in there, I'd see a, you know, candy wrapper or cigarette pack, a Coke can, a beer bottle, cigarette packs again, you know, and it just led zigzag a little bit, you know, there. And by the time I finished, you know, finding this litter close to the water's edge, and, you know, and I see there's a ditch and some sapling trees, you know, just young trees. And
so at that point, we know now you were right by the edge of the bayou, the 10-mile bayou.
Yeah, what they call the 10-mile bayou. I never knew it existed. I mean, it's later on, I see that there was a sign where you cross that. Maybe it's a tributary of it or something, and there's a little sign that says 10-mile bayou, I think. But like I said, I never knew. Or maybe, you know, I just never paid attention. I mean, I was not looking for bayous. I'd go to work, I'd go home, or I'd go to the store, and I'd go home. I say, you know, it's nothing that I look for. But anyway, that's what I wound up at, close to the edge of the water, and it was shallow and kind of, it wasn't a very really sloped ditch bank. It was just a slow, you know, gradual fall. And as you got a little bit further, then you see how it dropped off and deepened. But you could hear the water once you got so far down away from the traffic and the noise. You could hear the water rolling. But anyway, when I got up to the edge of it, you know, I'm looking for anything again, just something that might say kid, you know, that would link you to some kids. I started, you know, I was already kind of going towards a northwest pattern following this litter, but I kept walking that way and it wasn't very far. And I walked, you know, towards the edge of the water. I see some, you know, little patterns and you could tell, I mean, bicycle tracks. And, but I didn't notice any footprints, but there was grass and then there was, you know, the edge of the ditch bank or bayou bank, whatever, and a little bit of mud and then more grass and mud, just back and forth. I never picked up any shoe prints or anything. It was just tracks and they wasn't, yeah, they wasn't deep. So,
the tracks weren't deep.
No, they were more like, it's, you know, hindsight kind of gets you, you know, cause you know what you've seen then, but it was like somebody just pushed the bike along and not sat on it because it wasn't deep. And actually the mud, as I walked, you know, through the mud between the mud and the grass that's, you know, on the bank, you start to build up mud on your shoes and it was thicker. And I didn't see that, you know, around the tracks. So, you know, that kind of, it kind of told me the mud was a little bit hard and it would take, you know, a bit of weight to press down to make the tracks as if somebody was riding a bike. So to me, it was somebody had pushed the bike.
Anyway, but there wasn't enough mud wide enough to see if somebody was riding beside it.
Exactly. You couldn't really pick up no footprints or nothing. You just see the bike as if it just rolled by itself down there, you know. And we just follow it and you would lose it for a minute, and that's only because there was grass in that area. And then all of a sudden, you'd pick it up again when there was, you know, any distance at all that was mud or, you know, wet dirt, whatever. But it didn't dawn on me or anything. It was just more like, you know, well, maybe this is the way he went. But anyway, I walked it. I tracked it as far as I could. I come up within 15, maybe 10, 15 feet of this pipe going across the water, and then there was nothing. And I thought, well, you know, you see it stops, and then you see to your left is a hill going up out of the little wooded area, and you think that's probably what happened. They just walked up the bank with the bike, maybe, you know, he couldn't ride it up the hill or something. So, well, as I, you know, kind of walk up the hill a few feet and you come level with the pipe, I noticed there was what looked to be footprints going across the pipe with no bike tracks.
So what the footprints on the pipe, what, how would you describe those?
Just blotches of mud, like mud stepped to your feet, you know, it built up. Maybe I couldn't determine the size, if it was, you know, a kid or adult or a teenager. It was just big blotches where they, you could see a walking pattern going across it.
That pipe had, there was a pipe and a rail on either side. Where were the tracks?
The tracks was on the pipe, on the top of the pipe. Pipe. Yeah. And I do recall that throwing me for a minute. I'm wondering how could that kid take his bike across there? He would have to pick it up and walk with it, because I'm looking at, you know, I'm looking down and if I recall correctly, it's the pipe may be a 16, 18 inch diameter and maybe 8 inches away on each side was looked like an I beam with maybe a 4 inch flange, and there's no tracks there. There's not, you know, cause, I mean, I could see putting a bike on that flange and walking the pipe, or a bike on the pipe and walking the flange, but there was only tracks going across the top of the pipe.
Right.
There wasn't just like if it was yesterday, there was no tracks on either one of those flanges. It was on the pipe.
Did it look like multiple sets, or like there was one set?
It looked like one set. I mean, you know, I can remember at the time too that it didn't dawn on me, you know, because I just learned we was looking for three kids, but somehow, you know, that escaped me. And then I remember turning back and looking, and I thought, well, if there's three kids, that's only one set of tracks as far as I can see. I don't think, you know, 8-year-old could go up there and follow his friends and keep those same tracks without, you know.
Right.
I mean, I don't think that, they would think, well, let me just see if I can follow his tracks or anything. It just didn't seem right.
To you, it just looked like one solitary set of tracks going
like one person walked across that track and that's it. And, no bike unless they held it up and over their head and walked it. And I didn't think no 8-year-old could do that.
They said you couldn't tell what size. I just wanted to point out, there was one book written, I think by John Douglas, where I think he had said that you had said or thought that you had said that it looked like little kid size prints. Is that accurate?
Well, no, not really accurate. I remember I said the way I'm remembering it, I said that don't look like it could been a little kid's foot unless maybe this mud had, you know, had stuck to his feet so much, but I mean, it would weigh so much. It was just kind of, it was kind of odd. I mean, that's, and that's what I said. It's hard to determine if I'm looking at kids' footprints or teenagers or an adult's, because I was looking kind of at my feet and it was caked with mud. And so it's, I'd have to know for sure this, whoever pushed this bike, you know, was walking through the mud here and went across, or maybe somebody came from the other direction with muddy feet and went across. It was hard to, I mean, I couldn't.
Just all you know is a set of prints.
All I know is a set of prints.
But do you remember the color? Because what I've noticed when I was there is there were kind of different colored mud in different places. So you were walking up on the bank, and from what I remember, that was always kind of a dark brown colored mud.
Right. The mud on the pipe was kind of a beige color. It was a tannish beige color. It wasn't dark mud. It was, you know, as I recall, it was beige. It was kind of a light,
like a lighter
brown
color,
or tinted. You know, just lighter. Yeah.
Would you say it's lighter color than what was on your shoe?
Well, I would. Yeah, it kind of. I mean, I didn't at the time think it, you know, wow, that's a different color of mud or anything. Mm-hmm. But you know, thinking back, yeah, it was. It could have been a mixture or something, but it was. Like I say, it was kind of a beige color, and yeah, it's in different areas. I think there is, you know, different. I don't know if it's where the water stays the most or where it don't, but something, there is a difference. I believe that that maybe you could, you know, come to the conclusion that it came from a certain area. But to me, like I said, and I could be wrong, it could have been somebody pushed the bike to there and then shot up the hill and went home or whatever, and somebody else, you know, walked across the pipe. I don't.
Right.
It was just at the time, I thought I was on the track of you know, of the kids. So, like I said, it was that the footsteps stumped me a little bit, and I didn't know. I guess I thought I could find them, and I tried, but I couldn't.
So did you then go across the pipe to follow the tracks?
No, I didn't. In fact, there was kids behind me, and they wanted to go across the tracks, and I said they was going across the pipes. That's what they said. We're going to go to the other side. And I said, no, don't do that. You know, I mean, the water was running at a pretty good clip rolling through there. And I remember saying, man, what if you fall in? You know, I mean, you don't want to do that. I had no idea how deep it was. It was the first time I've ever been there. But I do know that it was rolling like rapids. I mean, you know, if a youngster did fall in there, I hope he'd have some help, because I think the way that it was rolling as fast as it was going, child wouldn't have much of a chance. But
was it getting dark at that point?
Yes, it was getting dark. And that's when I come out of there, I was thinking, you know, it's pretty close to dark, and I'd like to go to the other side. And the only thing I could think of, you know, was maybe get in a vehicle and get, you know, flashlights. And mosquitoes were starting to bite pretty good. I remember that, and I wanted to get me a shirt, long sleeve shirt, and I was thinking, you know, maybe I need to get to the other side, maybe get a vehicle, maybe hit the service road. You know, I didn't see nothing really. If you look across there, it was kind of, I don't know, you know, a thick patch of woods, and then probably a hills, or, you know, you just couldn't see what was really on the other side from where I was at on that side. So, like I said, it was getting dark. I was coming out ready to try to find Terry, which I think he went off the other direction. I don't, you know, really don't remember where he said it, or if I even asked him where he'd been. I just remember coming out, and as I approached the top of the ditch bank, there was some people standing out there, and I noticed a police car that was out there. There was some people standing by the police car, and as I was going towards the police car, Terry was coming towards me. And I walked around to the police car, and I remember there was a couple of people in front of me talking to a police officer, and I stood there behind them for a minute. I really wasn't paying attention to what they were saying. I was just waiting until they got done, and I could tell them what I'd seen, because, like I say, I don't know if it was going to mean anything or not, but obviously they were there to help, and I just wanted to let them know, you know, what I seen. And as soon as the kids walked away, you know, I leaned up against the car and I told them what I'd seen. And I remember, you know, I see the hand I'm writing on a notepad, and you know, I told them I, you know, where I went down into the bank and, you know, come across these candy wrappers. I remember cigarette packs. I think it was menthol, the green packs, beer bottles, a beer can, Coke cans. And I just explained, I was, you know, thought maybe I'd find a candy trail, you know, and might be able to, you know, run up on the kids. And after I told them that, I told them, you know, my name's David Jacoby. I live at 506 North 17th Street. If you need anything, just holler. I already had in my mind that I was coming back anyway. So, you know, I thought probably the right thing to do anyway.
So you were going to get long sleeve shirt, flashlights.
Yes.
The people that were standing around the car, did you recognize any of them that time?
I really didn't recognize any of them, but towards the east of the car, not very far distance away at all, maybe, you know, 20, 30 feet, as I remember the best, I seen Mark Byers and a woman, but I've never really seen an up close picture or seen his wife up close, but it's just, I always assumed that she had black hair, so maybe she dyed it at the time or something, I don't remember, but it just didn't seem like it was Mark and Melissa, it was Mark and somebody else, you know. I try over and over to picture that, and I just don't see, you know. Mm-hmm. But I'm telling you, Mark Byers was there because he was agitated, and he was hollering, you know, find my fucking kid. And that just, I can remember thinking to myself, man, why do you act like that? But he's always acted that way as far as I can tell and as far as I've been told. And as far as I've noticed him, I've seen him a few times. I've not personally went up and introduced myself, talked to him. I've been inside a store and I've heard him, you know, rambling on and talking some wild, crazy stuff, but that just, you know, helped find my fucking kid. I mean, it's like he was looking towards that cop car, speaking to them or yelling at them, but I mean, I'm certain that's what I heard find my fucking kid.
And so you and I earlier were trying to figure out about what time that was, because you said you thought you remembered it being more like 7:30, and that we looked into when it got to kind of the twilight, like you were talking about, which would be somewhere that happened at 8:54 that night. And Regina Meek was the first officer to respond who went up there. She cleared the buyers around 8:30. So to me, it seems like that interaction was probably happening right around 8:45 or so.
And that's, you know, I sat here last night watching when you text said, you know, it's sunset. I was waiting on it because I wanted to try to figure out once I see, you know, if I couldn't see that fence or if I could barely make that fence out, there's a scarecrow tied to it out there. And I used that. If I couldn't see him, couldn't recognize that, maybe just a shadow, but I could tell the line, you know, the fence was there. That was, you know, not quite there, but I'd say 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. It was within 10 minutes of what it looked like when I come out of them woods and seen the police officer. Yes, yeah. It was. May and this is December or January, so daylight savings time and all that factors. I don't.
So we're probably around 8:45, and then you told me that you then got back into Terry's truck.
We got back in the vehicle. Like I say, Terry, when I was coming up to the police car and walking around it, I've seen Terry coming. There was three or four people, you know, with him, and he was walking towards me. When I got done talking to the police officer, I turned around to look for the truck because we had left it sitting in front of somebody's house. I mean, I don't know the people and I don't know if he knew the people, but it was out by the road and, he wasn't there. And I looked around. And I seen his truck start to ease up. So he was coming up to where there was a drive that you could pull into. It's like the dead end of a road, you know, like the road went 30 feet from the edge of whatever street that was we was on, but then it was a sudden stop, and you're right there in the grass and the weeds at the edge. And I walked out there to him and told him I'd told the police officer, you know, what I'd found, and I was telling him what I'd found because, like I say, he wasn't with us when me and the others that was searching there. He wasn't with us then, and I told him what I found. I said, I'd like to get flashlights, get me a long sleeve shirt, and let's find a way to get to the other side. And I don't know if I really don't remember what he said about the tracks and stuff, but I remember saying, man, that water's rolling, man. I hate to fall off in there. And it wasn't that I couldn't swim or scared. I just, you never know what's flying through in that water. There's, mm-hmm. you know, branches. I did see branches, you know, coming down a pretty good clip. You'd see them. They'd go under and come up, go under. And I said, we need to find a way to get across there. And I said, I think we get there from the service road, you know, worth a try. But he said, look, I'll drop you off, and while you get flashlight stuff, I'm gonna go back home and see if Stevie's made it there. And that's what we did. He dropped me off. He left, and he said, I remember telling him, if he's there, find out where that little sucker's been and let me know. Mm-hmm. You know, because I was 8 years old. You just don't stay out that late. You know, I could see maybe 30 minutes late. You forgot the time, or you know, you was playing a game, but. Stay out that late, you know. I was curious, where in the world was he at, you know, that would take him, you know, this long to get home. And he said, okay. And he left, and I go in. I, you know, think I may have put an old pair of boots on or something. I remember when I come home, I put flip flops on if I got them laying there, or house shoes, and walk around the house in them. But anyway, I grabbed my boots, and I grabbed my long sleeve shirt, and I found a flashlight, and I dug another one out, and I had him sitting on the coffee table ready for him to come back, and he never come back. I just assumed he was there. And I can't remember if he had a phone at the time, but, you know, they used to come use our phone all the time if they needed to make a call. So, I did expect him, if Stevie was there, he would come back and say, hey, here he was, you know, I'll, you know where he was at, and right. tell me. Like, normally, I guess, I mean, if you was helping me look for my kid and I went home and found him, I'd either call you or I'd come back to your house and say, hey, man, I found him. It's okay. Hey, I never got that. And I remember I'd wait and wait and wait, and I never heard nothing. And it was getting pretty late. It seemed like a couple hours had gone by. And I remember thinking, I'm about ready to go to bed. And all of a sudden I hear somebody screaming. And, you know, there'd been some problems out, you know, on the road there for sometime, not very long, a few months, you know, I guess new neighbors or something moved in, but there'd been shotguns fired at night, you know, and I thought, well, somebody's out here fighting. And I went up to the door and opened the door, and it's Pam coming across the, excuse
me. It's all right, you can take that.
Anyway, Pam's coming across off the sidewalk towards my front door to the yard, and she's hysterical. I mean, crying and screaming. I mean, there's nobody else out there, so I don't know what she's screaming at. But, I remember I told my wife, I said, something's wrong with Pam, you know, and I walked on outside. And she told me that they still hadn't found Stevie, and I told her, you know, it surprised me because if he'd been gone, yeah, I mean, why did Terry not come back and tell me that he still hadn't found him? I mean, it didn't make no sense, but I asked her what was wrong. She said they still hadn't found Stevie, and she was going to walk somewhere. I don't know. I might have asked her why she was walking. I don't remember. She said she was fixing to walk to the church or something where they had their Cub Scout meetings. And I told her, no, you don't have no shape to be walking. Hop in the car. I'll go get my keys, and I'll take you there, you know. And I said, where's Terry? She said, I don't know. I think she told me that he dropped her off after work, or they went somewhere, and then he dropped her off, and she changed clothes, and she was going to, like I said, go by the church and see if she sees any sign of him at the Cub Scout meet place. And I got my keys, I took her, and she directed me around. Like I say, I didn't know where she was talking about going, and she pulled up this church, and she gets out. and goes in through, it's a fenced in, chain link fence, and she goes through the fence. And I see her go up to the door and stick her hand, you know, up over her head so she can see in through the little window. And then she comes back off the front of the church and walks down the side and does the same thing, you know, a couple windows, and then walks back to my car and gets in and says, let's go by the school. And school's not really very far from my house, but my kids went to a private school there, and we didn't go to the public school, so I really didn't know where it was at. She guided me back to it, and she didn't see nothing there. I can't remember what she, but anyway, she says, let's go find my daddy. Yes, she said, my daddy supposed to be here. And she said, let's go find him and Terry. And she guided me, which was just a real short trip down the road. We wound up under a street light on between what wound up being Mark Byers' house on one side and Michael Moore's on the other side, or the Moore's house on the other side. And they was people standing out under a street light and just talking again. I mean, it's like the first time I met people out there, it was talking like it was a social or something, you know. Mm-hmm. I pulled up and we got out, and there was Terry was there, and Mark Byers, and I think the Moores, which I didn't know them, but there was some people there, you know, like out in front of their yard, you know, their side of the house or whatever you want to call it. But they were just all talking, and it wasn't but a few minutes, you know, that Jackie, Pam's dad, pulls up. I believe Jackie pulls up, and then and there's Terry's. Terry's already there. I believe Jackie pulls up, and it's just him. And I don't remember what he said. I remember when I seen him. You know, I mean, I've known Jackie for a while. He was a good guy, and just, you know, he was a good man, is what I thought. It's kind of. He was kind of, I never had a father to do much with, but, you know, I would hear him talk and, you know, talk about his kids and what they'd done. And he was like, you know, a father I'd like to have, you know, and I've always respected that. And I liked him. He was funny, and we got along good. He lived across the street from my sister here in town. Anytime I'd come down, I would go across, you know, and talk to him. And I could just remember him asking, you know, what the hell's going on? I wasn't sure, you know, what Pam had told the man. Daddy, get down here. I need your help. Or Daddy, Stevie's missing or whatever. But I know I didn't want to go walk up to him and say, your grandson's gone. I didn't want to do that. And I remember when he saw me, you know, he come up to me and he says, is anybody found him? And I said, not that I know of, Jackie. And I go to tell him about those tracks. And he says, well, where did they lead? I said, I haven't been to the other side yet, Jackie. I said, I waited on Terry. I had my flashlights, my boots, my shirt ready to go. I assumed he'd found him because he never come back. I said, Terry said, I'm going to see if he's at the house. And I said, I hadn't seen him. And I couldn't tell you about the tracks, but I would like to go back there and see if we can pick them up. I said, you know, they start over on this south side and they go across the ditch or the pipe. And that's all I could see. I mean, I couldn't get to the other side. I wanted to get home, get a flashlight and go back. But,
so you guys wanted to go to the Blue Beacon side.
Yeah, what winds up being the Blue Beacon side off the. I mean, I knew where I was at in the sense of direction. I knew that there was a service road over there towards the interstate because you could hear, you know, the trucks going up and down the interstate. So, you know, I knew I was close, but I didn't know it was Blue Beacon side. But I mean, I didn't know really didn't even know the Blue Beacon existed because I never looked for a truck wash. I mean, that's just, right. You know, somebody was to ask me back then where the Blue Beacon is, I mean, there was actually two of them. There was one down right before Interstate 55 and 40 split. And I think that when they first said Blue Beacon, that's the picture that came in my head was, you know, a big truck wash, you know, going down the interstate. But I was surprised when we got there anyway. But yeah, it wound up being the Blue Beacon. And
so you ended up with you, Terry, Pam, and Jackie, all in one truck.
Right.
And you guys went around to the Blue Beacon.
Right. They followed. Well, Jackie said, you want to ride with me? And I said, yeah, let me take my car home. And he said, okay, I'll follow you. So I jump in my car and I head back to my house and they follow me. And, you know, when he pulls up, he's got Pam and Terry with him. And I jump in the truck and grab my flashlights and stuff. I don't remember taking them with me when Pam got there. I just remember getting my keys and my shoes and jumping in the car and taking her. But anyway, we get all my flashlights, my shirt, and jump in the truck with him. And he goes back almost to where we was at before, but on down and hits the 7th Street exit, which, I mean, that's the exit. It comes off the interstate and there's an overpass, but it also gets back onto the service road to put you on the interstate. And he went up 7th Street and we got on the service road and he pulls up and I'm looking, trying to find these lights because there's apartments there and you can see the upper levels of the apartment
from Mayfair Apartments over there.
Yeah. And you can see the upper level I can remember, you know, the lights, you just see, you know, like it's two, looks like a big 2-story house there, but you'll see 3 or 4 lights, you know, up that high. And I was looking for that as we're going down and he stopped. And he stopped on the service road, and I said, Jackie, I don't think I'd park here, you know. And I said, I remember, you know, a friend of mine got killed right in this area. I said, he pulled off the interstate because he was having troubles with his truck, and he didn't get all the way off the road, and a big truck come off and couldn't slow down. I said, you know, it killed him. And that's when Terry said, yeah, keep going, go on up here. And he guided Jackie on up, and as soon as we get past the Blue Beacon, he points out this road. It's like a just like a short drive that goes all the way beside, it goes alongside the Blue Beacon, and you get right up like the edge of their property, I think is what it was, because it was fenced in. But you get right up to this edge of the property, there's a fence, and the fence looked to me like it, you know, at one time it encompassed more than it did then, because it was like an open spot to the left, and it was a drive in it, and then no gate. But it was fenced all the way across, except for the area with no gate, and we had to stop because the road stopped. So, you know, we got out there, and we set the truck, I think, for a few minutes, just kind of talking about it. I mean, I'm looking, you know, for those apartment lights, and I'm telling him it's not far from the apartment. There's a pipe going across the water right there, and I said, you know, I'll see if I can, you know, find our way back there. And we grab flashlights, we get out, we start walking, and as soon as we hit the edge of the grass and trees, which it was all bushy. I mean, just a lot of weeds and small trees. And basically, that's about it. But I mean, it was thick briars. I remember getting stuck with briars out there. Anyway, we start walking off in there and we hadn't made it very far at all. And Terry wants to split up. He says, David, me and you'll go here this way. And Jackie and Pam can go that way. And Pam says, I'm going with you. And I looked, I said, no, I'm going to find them tracks, Terry. I said, you know, Jackie wants to see the tracks. I said, maybe we can pick something up there. And,
so we were looking earlier at a map.
Yeah.
Terry wanted to go, which was the direction.
To the east.
You're right. Which eventually you figured out later was the discovery site.
It's been, you know, sometime later, years later that I figured out that was the discovery site.
But, and you were wanting to go south straight back down to the pipe to pick up the tracks.
Right. What I wanted to do was follow the lights of that apartment towards that apartment, because I knew that when I came out off the edge of the pipe on that ditch bank, when I came out, I seen the apartments off to my right at a short distance. And I knew if I could follow that light, then I would run up into that bayou close to that pipe, and, you know, and there we have it. But, he wanted to go back to, which would be the left, which would be east, and I wanted to go back down and pick up some tracks. Jackie, that's what the whole point of us, you know, getting in and going there was, go to pick up those tracks and see where they led. But it was full of briars and branches and, you know, small trees, big trees, just really overgrown thick. But we hadn't been gone 5 or 6 minutes and don't seem, you know, headed towards the lights that of the Mayfair Apartments, that I hear something just, you know, tearing through the grass. I mean, you hear it, you know, hitting weeds, you know, sticks break, you know, like something's running towards you. And it startled me for a minute, but I seen, you know, as he got closer, it was Terry. And he's looking at me, you know, saying, "Man, I just heard something evil." And I remember saying, "What?" And he said, "I heard something evil." And, "Well, what was it?" He said, "I don't know. It just sounded evil. It made the hair stand up on my neck." And I kind of shook it off. I just thought, you know, to myself, I mean, you talk a lot of bad stuff, but, you know, you're older than I am and you're scared of the dark. I mean, what could you hear out here that scare you like that? And it didn't throw no flag of it. I just thought it was kind of silly, you know, and I just kept, you know, me and Jackie and Pam kept going towards, you know, the pipe. I don't know. It's, you know, like I said, later, years later, you know, I see it, and I found out where they were actually found, because for the longest I thought it was around that pipe. And you know, when it first came out and hit the news that they had suspects or arrested suspects or something, you know, it was my understanding that, you know, they were found around the pipe. Mm-hmm. And I can remember thinking, you know, back then, why didn't I go in the water? I'm a good swimmer. I mean, I don't know. It was all settled in my mind, you know, to me, that I should have went in the water. Maybe I could have, you know, found them. I wouldn't want to like that, but I wouldn't want to have somebody, because I didn't want to get in the water to, you know, go this long waiting to find their kids and then to find out that I don't know. It just didn't feel right in my head, but to me, it was over. They found the people that did it. They found the kids, and it was all done. But, you know, it was, I guess, 2007, I found out different. I mean, I don't know. It's why it's hard for me to piece it all together, but because so many things has been said, you know. I couldn't read the newspapers. I couldn't watch the news about it. I mean, it was just, I never have been able to do anything. I mean, even if I'd never known them, I wouldn't have been able to watch that. I can't stand those kind of stories. And man, that hurts. And I just didn't keep up with it. I went to Stevie's funeral, and it wasn't long after that, I guess, maybe October of that year, I got the hell out of there, man. I mean, I was scared for my kids. I mean, we wouldn't. You know, my kids, if they went outside, they stayed in our backyard, which was fenced in. If Stevie stayed with us, he wants to go out and play. He goes in the backyard, or he don't go out at all. And we couldn't, I mean, nobody, I mean, you know, my wife, she worked at the dog track, and I just told her to quit, because I wasn't going to hire no babysitter. You couldn't trust nobody. But we wouldn't let them go out nowhere if it wasn't fenced in. I mean, and one of us had to be outside. And we sat out plenty of times. You know, as long as the kids wanted to play, just sit out there and let them play. But we wouldn't let them go out front. You know, not go. We used to let them go down the sidewalk, two houses, turn around, ride your bike or the tricycle. You know, but then two houses was it. You turn around, you come back, and they enjoyed that. But from that day on, it was, you stay in this backyard, or you don't go outside, and one of us needs to be out there, or you don't go out. Yeah, I had to get the hell out of there. I was scared for my kids. I mean, plain and simple, you know. And that's what we did. We packed up and we left.
Let's go, if we can, go back to when you guys were in those woods. Did you ever make it to the pipe on the...
Yeah, eventually we did. It took a while. We tried to follow the lights, but it got so thick and there's so many briars. I mean, we had to go a little bit further east and back. I mean, a little bit further west and back around, you know, to get around all them briars. And it took us a little while, but we finally made it down there. And it was, It was so grassy on that side, I think because the bank was steeper. It was like hills back there. You know, you'd go up a little bit, down a little bit, and, you know, and you'd run into more briars. So we had to zigzag our way through there. And once we got there, you could see the tracks, but there was more tracks then, by then, you know. And I just,
did you see the tracks were like on the ones on the pipe?
Yes.
But there was more by then?
There was more everywhere when we got there. There was more on the pipe. There was more. There was some on each side of the pipe on the flanges.
At this point, you're like 11:30 midnight.
Or something. It's close to midnight. I can remember, you could get in certain spots, you could see a little bit, and you'd move a little bit, and you couldn't see, and then you could see, and I remember seeing, you know, looking up, and it's full moon, but the foliage in some places was thicker and some places was thinner. So, you could probably see a shadow, and then you might move 5 foot to the left and you could actually see it's a person. And then you move, you know, a little bit more and then you lose it because, you know, I guess you lose the light. But
did you see any bike tracks on the
north side? I did not see it, no bike tracks, period. None at all. And
did you guys see any other people back there when you were in those woods?
Man, I did not see nobody on the backside of there. Except Terry and Jackie and Pam and myself. Now, you could hear people, but to me, it sounded like they were on the other side. Or it may be down at the apartments or maybe down at the truck stop. But, I mean, the voices and things you hear, it wasn't nobody close, you know, that I could tell, that I could remember. But
so after that, after you guys looked in the woods, you went to the pipe, no more bike tracks. You could obviously, some other people had been across the pipe.
Yes, they have, yeah.
Terry goes over to what we know now as the Discovery site, comes back, says something's evil back there.
And wasn't gone, you know, I say 6 minutes. I could have, you know, 1 or 2 minutes more, 1 or 2 minutes less. But we had
a few minutes.
A few minutes. And comes running back with that. It's a stumper to me. I didn't hear nothing. I mean, you know, so we wasn't that far apart. To me, you know, later on, you know, I'm thinking, especially when this comes back, these kids didn't do it. The ones that was convicted, I've thought about it a million times and try to relive it. I don't know what he was saying. I mean, probably in his 40s. I don't know how old he is, but he's older than I am, a few years. But to be that age and to talk the talk he talks, you know, I don't know what it would take to really scare somebody like that and what you would have to hear, because I didn't hear it. I heard nothing, but, you know, as I'm walking, I'm talking, you know, I'm talking even more to Jackie and myself, just trying to talk it out more. What could have happened? Where could he be? What would he have done? Or, you know, trying to come up with answers. I mean, trying to figure out what you need to do, what you need to look for, you know.
So after that, is that when you were done, that they took you home?
Yeah, it was some time after that. I mean, we stood there for a long time, Jackie and I and Pam and Terry, and you know, talking about the tracks, you know, because I'm thinking, well, them kids went ahead and went across after I left, the best I can figure. You know, I never thought while I was gone at the house, I mean, this was all, none of this was taking place in my head, you know. I'm thinking Terry went home. Stevie's there. He probably busted his ass and went to sleep, and you know, that's it until Pam come up. And then it's, you know, I mean, once I seen how she was, it's hard. I mean, to me it is. I mean, when I see somebody like that, you know, something's happened, you know, it's just a feeling. I mean, you get, I don't know what's happened, but something's happened that, you know, she's hysterical like that. And I guess maybe it's trying to sink in, something's done happen, but I'm trying, you know, ask, you know, well, why are you acting like that? Because, I mean, I've seen some just act that way for little nothing. I mean, or what you might think is little nothing, but might be something to them. I don't know. It was just one of them confused, you know, things going on in your head, you know. And it maybe, you know, I don't know. Maybe if I would have took it a little more serious, maybe, you know, I should have went out on my own. Why should I have waited?
To be honest with you, but I think by the time anybody was asking you for help, it was already over.
I had to shut down the interview at this point and take a break because David was getting so emotional that he could barely concentrate. The entire process of getting to know me and reliving these events and recording this interview was extremely stressful on David. So at this point, we took a break, we had a cup of coffee, cleansed our palates, and then we sat back down and recorded another hour of interview that you're going to hear next week on Truth and Justice. Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production and is distributed by Wondery. Produced and edited by Mike Bussing and sound engineering by Shane Yoder. All music for the show was created, composed, and scored by PutThemInASong.com, who also mixed and mastered this episode. All of our font across all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. You can find more of Tate's work on Etsy. I'd like to thank Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com for designing, creating, managing, and maintaining our website, Truth and Justice Pod, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. And a big thank you to our transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Charlena White, Kaywood Yomnick, Ginger Fiola, Edith Swanneck, and Jen Reese in Candela. And as always, thank you to all of you for all of your engagement and support. If you like the show and you'd like to support us, you can do so in a number of ways. To financially support the show, you can go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. On the Patreon page, you can pledge as little as $3 a month, and we also have reward levels on Patreon that include access to behind-the-scenes videos of the tapings of our Friday follow-up episodes, ad-free versions of all of our episodes, Truth and Justice Army t-shirts and hats, and even the opportunity to co-host one of our Friday follow-up episodes. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. And lastly, you can always support us by supporting the companies that sponsor this program. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider for future seasons, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is engage in our investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email, theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. For all of you tweeters, you can connect with us on Twitter at Truth Justice Pod. I personally can be found on social media at Bob Ruff Truth, and Mike can be found at Murb Gaming, MURRBGAMING. And don't forget that we always have our 24/7 voicemail line open for questions, comments, or tips on our cases. That phone number is 269-224-2833. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. But as for now, I'm signing off. I'm Bob Ruff, and this has been Truth and Justice.